Welcome to Distant Voices, a podcast presented by Willamette Week. Join us every Tuesday to hear a member of the Willamette Week newsroom talk to Portlanders about how they are overcoming the pandemic. Come back on Saturdays to listen to Dive, a podcast hosted by me, Hank Sanders, that takes a look at the Willamette Week cover story. You can enjoy more episodes of these podcasts on this channel and learn more about our work at wweek.com. Enjoy this episode of Distant Voices.
Okay, I think we're good. All right. Hi, I'm Sophie Peel. I'm a reporter with Willamette Week. Today, I am joined by Representative Campos, who is a Democrat out of Alloa. And today, we're talking about the Right to Rest Act, which I believe you sponsored. You brought the bill in. And it's getting a hearing next week. And I would love to ask you a few questions about that bill, why you think it's important, why you are sponsoring it. I know a few of your other legislators are sponsoring it as well. So if you could just start by sort of giving me the meat and potatoes of what this bill is and what it could mean for Oregonians.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks so much for reaching out, Sophie. I am proud to have introduced House Bill 2367 this session. What it seeks to do is to essentially protect the rights of folks who are experiencing houselessness, who are out on the streets and are more often than not criminalized for the act of trying to survive, to live in circumstances that often are out of folks' control. It would seek to protect the rights of folks who are experiencing houselessness to move freely, to rest and sleep in public spaces as need be, to ensure that those who are experiencing houselessness would be able to connect with the appropriate services and outreach without harassment, to be able to occupy a legally parked vehicle, to essentially protect themselves from the elements, not essentially, but to also protect themselves from the elements in a way that doesn't obstruct public access, and to protect their right to share food and eat in public and pray if they so choose to.
Yeah, so if this were to be passed, would this effectively stop sweeps from happening?
This would seek to do that, yes. That would be a form of harassing folks, of disturbing them, of not letting them have those rights to live without that harassment.
Mm-hmm. Who are the primary naysayers of this bill?
I'm sorry.
Who are the primary naysayers of this bill, and are there any that have sort of come out of the woodworks that are surprising? And also, what's kind of the meat of their opposition to this?
So we have heard a lot more from supporters than we have from those who are opposed, but we do anticipate that there will be some testimony and opposition from the League of Cities. I haven't looked at the testimony list in a little bit, but I have heard through the grapevine that there's at least one chamber of commerce within the Portland metro area that isn't necessarily thrilled about the bill, but we have heard a lot of excitement, a lot of support. We've got folks like the Oregon Law Center, my apologies, from the ACLU of Oregon, from the National Council on Homelessness, a whole list of folks that are not coming to mind right now, Street Roots,
right.
AFSCME.
So have you fleshed out any other ideas about how to kind of keep these camps managed in any way? Like, are there any ideas about that within this bill, or is this bill primarily to just stop the sweeps and then go from there? Do you think it's mostly structural change, or do you think there are other ways, you know, for houselessness to be managed?
This bill is primarily to advocate for the rights of those who are experiencing houselessness. There are a number of other bills. There was one that was passed out of the Housing Committee today that actually seeks to increase the notification time for folks to retrieve for when sweeps are going to happen, when they can retrieve their belongings. But, we need to be having conversations, not about how to give people proper notification. While it's an important bill in these times, we need to be in a space where we're not talking about taking people's belongings, be the difference for life and death for so many folks, especially on a winter's night when someone loses their sleeping bag or their tent and are exposed to the elements because they have nowhere else to go.
Right. So I'm sure people who oppose this bill, one of their primary concerns is that if we stop sweeps entirely and if these camps aren't managed at all, that they're just going to keep proliferating. How do you respond to those people?
While we are not investing in services, whether we like it or not, folks are going to be out on the streets. And so this seeks to make sure that, because it is happening, this bill does not, allow people to urinate and defecate publicly. It doesn't grant folks who are experiencing houselessness any special rights. It doesn't, seek to let mayhem run loose. It just seeks to make sure that we are treating folks with dignity. To a certain extent, we know that people care more about issues when they see it right in front of them. And so, maybe this is one of those things that brings this more to the attention of folks of like, hey, we do need to be investing in services and making sure that we are keeping people off of the streets.
I mean, I think what I hear more than anything is it seems like this visibility is like they just, homeowners primarily, seeing it doesn't make them want to help necessarily. It makes them want it to go away, right? Like them being privy to the problem, their idea primarily is to like, well, let's just get them away from here. Let's get them away from my vision. Do you think that visibility creates kind of a stronger desire to fix?
I think, that's certainly in the eye of the beholder. But that doesn't fix the problem, right? Knowing that we're just moving people from place to place, that doesn't do anything. But if we are able to, make sure that somebody has somewhere that they're going to return that night to be able to their belongings, if they know that they can leave to go look for a job or to go access the mental health services they need without fear that their belongings are going to be taken, can make a huge difference for somebody being able to eventually access housing. Mm-hmm. So we need to decrease barriers, not increase barriers, and just make the problem go away out of our own eyesight, because mm-hmm. it doesn't go away.
What do you think are the chances that this bill will continue to move forward?
It is an uphill battle.
Is that sugarcoating it? Maybe a little.
And we recognize that there are challenges, but one of the things that I think is really important about this bill is that we are centering the voices of those who are experiencing houselessness in this. I sit as the vice chair of the housing committee. I have also watched a couple of hearings that have not been in the housing committee, but have addressed the issue of houselessness. And one of the really interesting things is that you don't really hear the voices of those who are directly impacted by this issue. I've heard, I think, one person who identified themselves as someone experiencing homelessness. That's a problem. We need to be hearing from those that are impacted by this policy. House Bill 2367 is a bill that was put together. I introduced it, but it was put together by advocates of those who are experiencing houselessness, of those directly experiencing this. And so that makes this bill unique in this legislative session.
So would you tell me who you are?
Sure.
In non-COVID times, and then how you got involved in the Facebook group.
How I got here, yeah, okay. My name is Jeff McNamee. I live out in Hillsboro with my family, which you might be able to see over my shoulder here. We've lived out here since we moved to Oregon back in 2013. I currently work in the healthcare industry. I actually work in, I work in IT for one of the larger providers, and I work in their electronic medical records division. So I'm getting closer.
So I kind of wonder high level, who you think at this point is kind of left out in the cold, or like doesn't know how to get from wanting a vaccine to a vaccine appointment?
Left out.
Who doesn't know how to do that? Is the answer, one answer is everybody, right?
Well, yeah. Okay. So some of this is just sort of a byproduct of our healthcare system in the United States. It's, although to be fair, and I'll get to this in a second, I don't know how much better it could be. A lot of it is there's almost too many options now, right? Like where do I, there's not that one place where you go, right? You could just say, I'm just going to go to the convention center and I'm just going to wait for my call. And that's acceptable. Like they're doing 8,000 to 9,000 shots a day there right now. You'll get your number will get picked and you will get called. If you wanted to just say, you know what, I'm just going there, I'm not going to bother with all this rigmarole, you sign up at Get Vaccinated Oregon and then they'll reach out to you. That's probably one of the easier ways to do it. But if you're in a little bit more of a hurry, it is pretty easy to get overwhelmed. And that's because we don't have one system. If you want to go to Walgreens, you can go to Walgreens. If you want to go to Fred Meyer, you can go to Fred Meyer. If you want to go to Safeway, have fun at Safeway. If you want to go down to Salem, you can go there. Providence, you can go to Providence. And they've all got their own systems. And in many cases, especially when you're going to a pharmacy, the systems are different. And, all the big providers like Salem Health and Providence and Kaiser and OHSU and all them, they all kind of have like a similar interface. It's all the same system. But all these others, they really don't. And so, you're constantly creating online accounts and entering your information all the time. It just gets to be a lot. It's like looking for a job. You have to sign up and create a profile in 25 different companies, and it's really time consuming. So I'd say people, I think the people that are probably having the biggest trouble right now are ones that are both in a hurry, but maybe know just enough about technology to be dangerous, but not enough to solve it, if that makes sense.
What if you're in a hurry? Mm-hmm. Let me run through my next steps and sure. See where you just, there's OHSU's site, which is opening appointments.
Mm-hmm. And that's very similar to the Get Vaccinated Oregon legacy site. It's self-serve instead of invitation. Like legacy's system is used at OHSU. That's only by invitation because it's like, Hunger Games, trying to, schedule 9,000 appointments or 8,000 appointments a day. But OHSU's, they open Mondays and Thursdays at 9 o'clock in the morning. They're usually gone within 20 minutes, but,
But at least it's a specific time to try.
Yeah, they do it on Mondays and Thursdays at 9 o'clock in the morning. People on the board this morning were picking them up. And they went quickly. I think they went in 18 minutes. but they do have them. And OHSU is running two sites now. They've got PDX, which is the big one. And then they run at Hillsborough Stadium less frequently, but they still do it there. So, yeah, that's another one. Yep.
The thing I've been recommending to people is the websites that pull up the vaccine appointments from pharmacies.
Pharmacies.
I'm forgetting their names, but the
findashot.org is a good one. That's probably my favorite. It auto refreshes.
Okay.
Every 4 minutes. So you don't have to sit there and keep another one is vaccinespotter.org. Mm-hmm. It has similar information. In some senses, the information is a little bit more complete, but I was looking at it this morning. I don't like it as much, but it never hurts, honestly. And it tends to cast like the whole state. You pretty much just like type in Oregon and it just like gives you the whole state. So if you didn't mind driving out to like Hood River, it'll give you Hood River. Whereas Find a Shot tends to look at a radius. around you. I think it looks like 50 mile radius or something like that. So, but that one automatically refreshes. So if you just keep it up on your browser, anytime you log in, it's no more than 4 minutes old. And it kind of has like some automatic triggers. If it gets down below a certain number of appointments available, it kind of goes yellow and says, you know, these were available a couple minutes ago, but by the time you get there, they might be gone. So yeah, that's a really good one though. And that's for lots of pharmacies. That's like, I want to say both that and Vaccine Spotter do like, I think like 12 or 13 different chains.
That's a lot.
They get everybody.
They've
so
improved yeah. over time, right? Like,
yeah, they have. Yeah. Yeah. Originally, I don't know what their technology is, but originally they only had feeds through something like 8 of them, but then Albertsons and Safeway linked up and then somebody else linked up, but they've got a whole bunch of, like, they got a list. It says it on the top of the page, who they're pulling appointments from. And that's actually a pretty good one, especially if you don't, you know, if you don't dig on big crowds, or you don't want to go into Portland, right? I mean, I've been to the convention center a couple times. You know, I was volunteering there last Monday, for my company as like IT support. And, I mean, it's a machine. It cranks out the shots, but it is a big operation. So if you don't really want to do that, your local Walgreens or a Rite Aid or something might be your better option. And that's where findashot.org comes in.
Hey folks, Hank here. We end the show today with a interview with Congressman Earl Blumenauer. This is an excerpt of an interview that the staff did with Blumenauer. It was referenced in our episode with him in the Dive podcast, which airs Saturdays. And this is a juicy 4-minute interview talking about the Columbia River light rail bridge that they're planning and hoping to get out there. And use. So enjoy this excerpt of that interview, and thank you so much for listening to this episode. As you know, come back on Saturdays for Dive, come back on Tuesdays for another episode of Distant Voices. Thanks so much. Have a great rest of your day.
Based on your conversations, which I'm assuming you're having with Congressman DeFazio, do you expect a bridge over the Columbia?
Well, what I'm literally talking to Peter almost every day. My goal is to get him $1 trillion or more to be able to spend on the work that we're doing with him. There will, under this blueprint, there will be resources for projects of national significance. There is a set aside for that, billions of dollars for projects that local communities cannot do on their own. But that will require us to get our act together. One of the great frustrations of my career is helping get $200 million for the Columbia Crossing activity. And we ended up with not much to show for it.
Well, they just basically burned the money.
Close. That's simply not acceptable. We ought to sift through the embers, look what's there that's usable. But Oregon and Washington, the business community, labor, environmentalists, local government, need to have a really comprehensive vision and develop a consensus. If we're at open war, if we're not being able to meet community needs and to show that this is a feasible project that meets our low carbon efficient future, somebody will get in line ahead of us. But
well, I'm going to ask the third rail question, which is about rail. Should the new Columbia River Bridge have light rail on it?
If I have anything to say about it, it'll never be built unless it does. We've invested several billion dollars on a very good rail network. I've been talking about, and in fact, working for rail across the Columbia River for 30 years. I worked on those campaigns. We came close, but not quite. To have a major investment that does not tie in to this multi-billion dollar regional system would be lunacy. It is not going to be approved without it. I will tell you, it's not just me. The federal government won't do that.
But as I recall,
and I don't think
lawmakers in Southwest Washington saw it as a deal breaker.
It's a deal breaker unless it's there. I will just tell you, talk to Jay Inslee, talk to Kate Brown, talk to their transportation commissions. Talk to the Biden administration. They're not going to, in the lens that we are looking at infrastructure has two dimensions. One is equity, speaking to racial justice and developmental opportunities for the whole community, not leaving people behind. The second is a low carbon future. You cannot satisfy the demand for a low carbon future if it's just going to be simply automobiles, even if you're going to provide more bike and pedestrian access. It has to have rail, and I'm convinced it will. And I don't think there will be any hint from the Biden administration that they're interested in it otherwise. And I think that's where Jay and Kate are.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Distant Voices. Thank you to everyone who was a part of this episode, including the guests and Willamette Week Newsroom. Also, special thank you to AmpMusic.co and Heather Witte for the music that you heard on this podcast. For more great content, be sure to follow Dive by Willamette Week on all podcast platforms. Join us Saturdays for our Dive podcast show, and follow along with Willamette Week's content at WWeek.com and on all social platforms. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.